The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
My name is K.O. Grissett. This is Brian Norris, and this is Joe May. We represent North Carolina generally and Malta Housing as Catalyst. I'm in the Triangle. Ryan is in Metro Charlotte. And then Joe is in the Triad, so the Greensboro, Winston-Salem area. And we just want to thank you guys for coming out and joining us and learning a little bit more about Malta Housing. So before we get started, I just want to let you know what we're hoping that you get out of this time. First, we want to give you just an overview of Malta Housing, what that looks like and what it is. Then we want to give you a biblical perspective of Malta Housing. Joe is going to do that for us. And then last but not least, we're going to give you a couple of stories as well as next steps to get involved in Malta Housing. And Brian is going to do that for us. I don't think I said this the last time, but I'm going to make sure I say it this time. We are going to have a question and answer portion, and that is going to be towards the end of our time. So once Brian wraps up, he's going to lead us right into our part for questions that you have. So please hold your questions, write them down. We definitely want to get to them and be of best service as we can to you guys. Before we get into the nitty gritty, I just want to just ask you guys a question. When you think of unchurched people, what are some of the first thoughts that come to mind? And we're a real nice, lovely. This feels like my small group at church. So, awesome. So I'm expecting to hear some answers. So when you think of unchurched people, people that don't attend any churches or anything at all, what are some of the first thoughts that come to your mind? So people. Okay, people in mobile homes, okay.
Just hurting people.
Hurting people. So hurting people, okay.
Sports lovers.
Did you say
sports? What?
Did you say sports levels? Because we don't come to church on Sundays. Sundays is not a day for church, it is a day for football. Okay.
Don't start to one, so
I don't know. See, now that was a brilliant answer. We had some good answers, but that was a brilliant answer. That is a favorite. Yeah, you definitely deserve that book. So for us doing Malta Housing, I've really thought about this. Like when I think about unchurched people, who do I think about? And I think a lot of times we think about a lot of the differences that we have with people that are unchurched, especially as Baptists, and how we can reach them and kind of, you know, get through the weeds on the differences. But I don't think a lot of times we think about the commonalities that we have. And when we're talking about Malta Housing, one of the biggest commonalities I think that we have with people that are unchurched is the fact that we all go to sleep, we all eat, and we all want a place to call home. And for a lot of people in our state and definitely in our cities, Malta Housing communities are a place that many people are calling home at a rapid rate. So what is exactly a Malta Housing community? So Malta Housing, also known as multi-unit or multi-family communities, is just basically a building or a group of buildings or a structure made to house separate families and individual units. The most common multi-housing unit that we would see is an apartment complex, but we also see condos, duplexes, and also trailer parks and things like that. So who exactly lives in these multi-housing communities? So I know we talked about, you know, football lovers, I'm guessing, or people that don't go to church on Sundays because of sports and all those different type of people. But if you're really thinking about it, when we think about the unchurched, and especially the fact that there is 1 in 3 people in North Carolina that's living in a multi-housing community, that is a wide array of different types of people. I mean, that is people of different skin colors, of different socioeconomic strata, all different type of people living in these communities. With that being said, out of that 1 in 3 people in North Carolina that are living in multi-housing communities, 95% of those people are unchurched. So that means 95%, and it's about, let's say, about 900,000 residents currently living in apartment communities across our state. 95% of those people have no church home. So now that we've thought about that, and the fact that I also want to add that that is one of the largest demographics of lostness in our entire country, let's think about, like, where are they living, like, and what does that look like? So multiple housing communities typically look like, and we categorize it in strata because that's what multi-housing communities do, in A, B, C, or D communities. A-type communities are typically expensive lofts, condos, townhomes. They're typically gated or enclosed and have an overabundance of amenities. So for me in Raleigh, that would kind of be like our downtown center where I'm looking up and I'm seeing these apartments that I feel like I will never, ever get into because I love Jesus, but ministry usually does not pay that much. But for me, I see these huge things as pools, and you know, these people are generally tend to be millennials or senior adults. So folks that might have decided they don't want to take care of this big home anymore, but they want to kind of live right in the city and be able to go to the restaurants and places that they want to go. So that's what we typically think about when we think of type A communities. These communities are usually also have been created in the last 10 years or have had like really, really nice renovations over the past 10 years. B-type communities are also nice. These are still apartments and condos and stuff like that. But they are usually have less amenities than the A-types. And also the price range for these communities tend to be a little bit lower. So whatever is like the best community that you can think of as far as multi-housing in your city, that type A, these are going to be a little bit more affordable. And they're probably not going to be directly in city centers. So they're going to maybe be just a little bit off where it's kind of easy to get to where you want to go, but probably not as accessible as like an A-level community where, at least for me in Raleigh, I can think of one A-level where you can literally go down your elevator and you can be right at the market and at like one of the best places, what we call North Hills, in the city. Like just go down your elevator and almost everything that you need is right there in front of you. C-level communities are conventional apartment townhomes. This is what we generally think about when we think about your general kind of average run-of-the-mill multi-housing complex. These usually tend to be about 30 years old or less, and some of the stuff is kind of just not as nice. There could be some wear and tear in the interior or the exterior of the property, and also there's kind of some limited or dated stuff within. So like say if you're in a C, you might have a refrigerator and freezer and they're all nice, but maybe they might not have the ice machine that you want. And you're willing to take with those inconveniences because you're not paying as much for that place. So those are your type C communities. Our type D communities are lower income apartments, they're trailer park communities, and they usually also include government subsidized housing. So these particular places are usually governed by housing authorities, and this is where you're going to probably be on maybe the fringe of the city or maybe in the lower socioeconomic areas of the city. These are where they tend to congregate. They usually also have a lot of transitional people there. So you might have some folks that you meet one week and then the next week they're gone and nobody knows what happened to them. So now that we've broken down kind of our categories of multi-housing, I want to kind of go into the ways that we try to approach these through ministry. So we usually use three primary approaches that we've seen to be fairly successful when we're dealing with multi-housing ministry. The first is intentional, the second is incarnational, and the third is indigenous. So for the incarnational approach, this is where a local church goes into the community. They usually do events so that they can build relationships with folks, and they're usually represented directly. So this is where you might see somebody in a D community maybe giving away turkeys on Thanksgiving or something like that, and then they try to follow up with people as they do so. So the three words that I want you to take from you, like when you're thinking about an intentional community, is we can go. We can go and do this. We can go and have this event, those type of things. With the incarnational approach, this is where a person, a couple, or a group of people decides to move into a community to basically work and build relationships and hopefully disciple folks. So with this one, the approach that you can think about when you say these three words, we can stay. We can stay in this community, we can build relationships, and we can develop things because we're here and we have a gospel focus for it. The last and certainly not least and possibly one of my favorites is the indigenous model. So this is a missional community that is started on site with leadership from within. So this is someone that understands the heartbeat of the community. They probably lived there for a while. They know their neighbors, and they're like, man, I really want to serve God by serving my neighbors and helping them understand what it really means to know Jesus. Right. So with this, this could also include maybe someone that you've been reaching out to in your neighborhood. So you've been reaching out to somebody. They've come to know Jesus. They're really excited and on fire. They want to reach their neighbors. And you're like, man, you live here. You're a prime candidate to actually talk to people about Jesus because you know what's going on in this community. When you think about this particular motto, here's what I want you to take away. We are here. We are already here in the community. We know the community. We know the context. And we can be effective in doing ministry here because we understand what's going on. Now that I've kind of talked about basically what is multi-housing, who's in multi-housing, and how do we reach people in multi-housing on a 30,000 foot kind of scale, we're going to go ahead and break it down with Joe May. He's going to give us a biblical lens and a base from which we can see the importance of why multi-housing ministry is something that we should really do.
If you're like me, when you heard those statistics, your brain started turning. The first time I heard them, I was a little bit skeptical because I was thinking, okay, you've got A-level communities and D-level communities and everything in between. It's a very different types of people, very different types of people, and with very little in common outside of the fact that they are not involved with local church. And I was wondering, how is that possible? They have so much not in common, but this one piece that's in common. And I couldn't figure that out. And then I started going into multi-housing communities, and I was talking with people. This one particular D-level community, I was talking with some members that lived there, and there's a church right across the street. And I said, hey, does that church do anything to reach out to this community? And they said, the church does a lot of things, but none of them are for us. And it kind of broke my heart because they saw the church and said they don't want to reach us. And that was a D-level community. And then I was talking to a pastor at a high B, low A. That was a church across the street from a high B, low A level community. And I said, Pastor, do you do anything? What are y'all doing to engage that community? And he said, you know, every Sunday our doors are open and they just won't come. And it struck me that in both of those situations, the thing that they had in common was that churches aren't doing anything. Churches are overlooking these communities. And then you think, but there's 95% of them that don't know the Lord. There's 95% of them that are separated, and if they were to die, would be separated for all of eternity from our Savior, and we're not doing anything. We're overlooking them. And I think there's probably several reasons that we do. One is that as churches, we're busy. We do a lot already. And this seems like, as a breakout option, that's just something, another program we could add to our already busy plate. But I don't think that's how Jesus would have us look at it. In Matthew chapter 9, we're going to plop down in the context of Jesus doing a lot of ministry. Jesus is very busy. He's casting out demons. He's teaching. He's healing. He's busy. And in verse 35, it tells us all the things he was doing. Jesus continued going around to all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and every sickness. So Jesus was busy. That's a full plate. And the discretionary time was not very much for him. If he was picking a breakout session, he'd say, I got a lot going on already. Where's the one for sleep, right? But then in verse 36, when he saw the crowds, he felt compassion for them because they were distressed and dejected like sheep without a shepherd. It's 95% of the people in our communities that live in multi-housing are distressed and dejected like sheep without a shepherd. When Jesus saw them, he didn't say, I'm too busy. He didn't keep moving without giving a glance. He had compassion. And really, if we can do anything in this breakout session, it would be for us to leave here and be brokenhearted by the fact that there are multi-housing communities that are in our area of influence, that 95% of the people that live there don't know Jesus. That when you drive by them on the way to work or on the way to church every single day, that you would be heartbroken by that reality. That you begin to see them differently. You wouldn't just see them as a stop on the way. That you would see them and you would see moms loading their kids up in the car and you would pray for them. that you would see people getting out, sitting up at the bus stop, getting ready to school, and you pray for those kids. That you'd see dads that are getting in the car to go to work, and you would pray for them, and you would see those communities differently. That you would have compassion on them. That's what Jesus told his disciples to do. He said that after he saw this, he tells his disciples, the harvest is abundant, but the workers are few. Therefore, pray to the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest. So really the call there is two things for us. One, we know that the harvest is abundant. 95%, that's a really good grade in school, but it's a really bad statistic for lostness. And we have an opportunity to pray that the people in our churches would go out, that this would become something that people are more aware of and begin to engage. We also have an opportunity to be an answered prayer that Jesus commanded his disciples to pray, to send out workers. We could be those workers. So what we want you to do as you take away from this is to see your community through different eyes, to have a heart that is moved to compassion by the reality of spiritual lostness in your communities that you drive by every single day. And Brian's going to tell us some stories from his own experience about that.
Oh, that's good, Joe. Thank you. So I get the fun job being the guy with red hair, Scott Irish background, and coming in and just telling some fun stories that are like doing this hard work, and I'm just kind of going, hey guys, how's it going? So let me tell you, to start out with, 2001, I started vocational ministry and in a suburban kind of southern city, and I was there, and I felt like, maybe you've had this experience, I grew up in church, in Christ, and that church that I came back to, and I felt like I was at the big boy table, like the proverbial curtain had been drawn back, and I'm sitting in there with all the leaders, and they're doing this thing, and I'm sitting there, and I remember expecting that to look different than it did in that particular church's season of life. So that church was a church of about 1,000 people that was in decline at that point, and they were about 700 to 800 people in average attendance. So they're having this conversation at that point. This is again 2000, 2001, and they're talking about how the city had shifted, and they had once been a suburban area of the city, and now all their people had, as the city center had grown, the suburbs had gotten farther away, and their people that came to church were driving farther and farther in. And that's a very common conversation. So here they were with this beautiful large building that had a lot of people, more people around it than ever before, but they were talking about, you know, our people don't live near here any longer, and so what would it look like for us to sell this building, for us to go to where the people that are part of our church live? Maybe you're familiar with that conversation. And please don't hear me wrong. I'm not suggesting that that's always a horrible thing, but it was disheartening to me as a young minister. You can imagine, there are more people around us than ever before. They just are not, you know. It wasn't what I expected to hear when I sat down at the big boy table. And the way that fleshed out for me, I'll just kind of put a pin in that conversation and say that I was ordained, and my wife and I, we went on to East Tennessee, and we went off and we got the opportunity to come to Charlotte to plant a church about 6 years ago. And the guy was calling me to, I saw this area growing up and I saw these things happening, and I've been praying for people to come to that area and to plant, and God was doing some of that, but just not at the rate that I, and eventually maybe you've had those conversations with God where, what about you, right? Maybe you identify with this as well. How many of you, did any of you grow up in a church? Like you grew up in a gospel preaching church, like from the nursery all the way through. I was one of those church kids, right? Now I understand that's not necessarily how a lot of us work, but that's where I was at. And in that setting, sorry, the lady in the back came in. What she's doing, I think she's counting down, so I'm completely distracted.
What's going on over there?
So I grew up in church nursery all the way through, and I had some beautiful opportunities in that, and one of those was seeing all these missionaries that I was enamored with growing up. Maybe you were like me, that I was just like, man, I hear these stories, and I was just like, That's incredible, you know. And I in fact, a missionary led me to Christ when she was coming through in my Sunday school class as a boy, and I just had this beautiful picture. Man, what would it be like to go and do that? Of course, you understand the Great Commission. You've heard that we all have our opportunities to be missionaries as we're going, wherever we go. You're familiar with that kind of conversation. But I want to, if I can, through these stories, give you a little snapshot of like how real that is. When you're talking, whatever, maybe some of you like me, you didn't get to, although I've done all kinds of missions trips, I haven't been able to go and live overseas for my life. That's not what God's led me to do yet in my life. Some of those same people that I was praying for, I'm now ministering to as God has brought the nations to our doorstep in the city. And that's, when our brother said that, you know, the most unreached demographic in the state of North Carolina is one of three people that exist in apartment complexes. That's not hyperbole. That's a legit thing. And so every one of those demographics that you might think of exists consolidated. Maybe you've heard the lost pockets that are being talked about. I didn't know about the lost pockets when we started that process. God did. It's working in lost pocket one, and lost pocket four, and that's what we're at. And if you go into the consolidation of the center of these lost pockets, often multifamily housing exists like in the center of those lost pockets. Not with everyone, but many of them. So let me tell you this one story about a guy that is now my brother. I'll not bury the lead, I'll put it right away. So Sadiq was a guy who was up in front of the, as I was driving out of my community as we moved into West Charlotte, he's standing by the bus stop, and he's fidgeting. And I know the bus is already gone. I spent my first several months riding that same public transit to get to know people and figure out how this is all working and all this kind of stuff. And so he's fidgeting. And I rolled down my window of my 1978 Ford F-150. I was working with a lot of hipsters at the time. And so I just rolled down my window and I said, "Hey, man, do you need a ride?" He said, "Yes, just missed the bus." And with a heavy accent, he's like, "I'm on my way to college." He was studying medicine. And he sat down on my bench seat beside me, and he asked that question that if you're a pastor, you sometimes wonder, how do I answer this? What do you do, right? And it's not that I'm ashamed of that answer, but conversation shifts, and sometimes I don't get real answers, you know? And so I was like, what am I going to do? So I said, I'm a pastor. He's like, oh, he's a student, so he goes straight to questions. He says, could you please explain for me the Trinity, sir?
Wow.
And I'm like, well, let's just start with the easy stuff. So I began to talk to him just in relational terms about how God didn't create mankind out of need, but that he existed as a relational God, fellowshipping within himself from eternity past to eternity, truly. And so we just talked from one aspect. There are many things we could have talked about, but that's how the Spirit led. And he was like, oh, how about that? So how about you? What's your religious background? What are things like for you? He said, well, I grew up in Mali, West Africa, and I'm a Muslim. You know, I study Islam. And turns out he was part of the Berber tribe, and, you know, his dad had several wives, and it was a very different culture. So we began, everybody that I met in the neighborhood, I was like, come on over to the house, Laurel, cook a good meal, have a great time. And, you know, so we would do this. And at that time, we were worshiping in a movie theater, and that was several miles away from where we met in West Charlotte. And I walked in, as my custom was, to the convenience store on the corner to get an energy drink, because I wasn't right with God, and some money to put in the offering plate. An old preacher told me, your pastor always put some money in the offering, but I don't carry money. So that's what I would do on Sunday mornings. And I walked down there, and Sadiq was the attendant at that store. I said, hey, how's it going? You know, we're worshiping the block from here. Why don't you come down? His eyes got as big as saucers, and he said, I don't know if I'm going to be going to a worship gathering anytime soon. But I did start to, he did come over to the house, we did have meals together, and he did start to get to know my family, play with the dog, play with the kids. And where I was taking him to trips, as I had custom to going to the office, he would ride in with me. And one morning he saw, we were doing a discipleship group and we had a bunch of these copies of this book called Multiply. And he pointed out that book, and I said, hey, you want a copy? I gave it to him. The next time I saw him, less than a week later, he read the whole thing, which is unbelievable. And he was open. So I said, why don't you just, you got any questions about this book? If you don't know, this book goes all the way through the Old and New Testament from a discipleship perspective. And he just had a whole truckload of questions. So I started sitting back on the back patio, and he would just ask these questions. He'd see the Bible had answers, and he was very, very interested. About a year later, through this conversation, we're meeting for lunches at this point at near his school that had become kind of our regular rhythm. We're eating at the noodle place. And I remember this question like it was yesterday. I looked across the table, and it just like, it went from regular life conversation to one of those spirit-led kind of questions, right? He looked across the table, and he said, Brian, if I gave my life to Jesus, would my life get better? It's a pretty loaded question, right? And I said, Sadiq, that depends on what you mean. They murdered Jesus, and I don't think that you're going to be, like, wealthy and not sick ever, following Jesus does not necessarily mean our world's definition of better. But yes, absolutely, you get relationship with Father and you have Jesus. And that's a wonderful thing. When we begin to talk about what that would look like. He said, that's what I need to do. I need to follow Jesus. And that was loaded for him. This is why he'd been asking every question he'd come up with for a year, because he knew the ramifications of that. So I remember him going through the process of, am I going to tell my family or not? If you know Islam, and in that setting, it was a difficult decision for him to make. And I remember when he finally got the courage to share his faith with his mother over the telephone for the first time. And for weeks, she pretended that he was just joking, you know, because then she wouldn't have to tell his father. But after she finally became convinced that, yes, he was, in fact, a follower of Jesus, they did not disown him, which was his fear. But they did cut his funding from school. So he doubled up with work, and we walked that road together. And this is years down the road now. So I just mentioned that story to mention that we have been given the opportunity. And you guys know this. I'm not talking to people that just showed up on the mission of us, you know, for the first time yesterday. We've walked with Jesus. We're given the opportunity to see God's fingerprints all over our lives on a daily basis as we walk with him and we see him open doors for mission. I'll just close with this. We decided to move into an apartment complex about 5 months ago with my wife and my three kids. And we didn't know how we were going to do that long term. We just felt like this was what God was leading us to do for this interim. And a guy that I got a chance to lead to the Lord that was dating a girl that we came to Christ in our church a couple years ago. He was a firefighter in Central Charlotte. And lo and behold, after he came to Christ, and we're in this apartment complex, we were in this apartment complex because it was a B-level, B-plus community, and it was walkable to a couple D-level communities. And so a lot of the work that we were doing was right in this cluster. And so I could be there from the incarnational approach that was just talked about. And how about that? This guy came to Christ, and his job moved him to the fire department, literally across the street from my apartment. Those guys had just, the fire department had just come to a community day that we hosted in the apartment complex around the corner. Though they weren't yet Christians, they wanted to let the kids know, hey, you don't have to be scared of us. They wanted to let the elderly in that B-level community, that housing development, understand, the government housing development, understand that, look, if you have a health need, we'll come and help you. That's what we're right around the corner. We're your neighbors. And so as we were trying to get our community to engage well with one another, God was already planting somebody that was fresh in his faith to come into that place far before us. We had tried to buy a home across the street so that we could continue this process. It would seem like a closed door. A couple weeks later, those folks circled back and said, you know what, we'll negotiate with you. We'll go ahead and do that. And I'm telling you, just one thing after another, the neighbors have come to us in this brand new apartment, this brand new neighborhood, though we're across the street from the apartment complex that we were in last week. They're coming to us saying, hey, we used to have block parties. You know, no church or anything. We just used to connect more. Two families. This is weird in Charlotte, you know, like in the urban kind of community. Two families brought us meals. I mean, it's just a strange thing that God is just going before us and preparing the way. And there's no thing that you can convince me of other than when we follow God, we get the chance to see those same kind of cool stories that we may have heard as kids, that God's just at work all around us. And we're missionaries right in our own backyard, and God is bringing the nations to our doorstep. And I'm telling you, without a shadow of a doubt, multifamily housing is one of the fastest ways for you to get to experience that. So we're going to talk about a training that's coming up in December that's not far from here, and then we're going to open up the floor to conversation. Questions. You have this for your training right here, December 11th and 12th, and it's at 4212 South Elm Street, Eugene Street. Wow, that's a two-word street. And you guys know where that is?
No.
It's like a first name, two first names kind of thing.
GPS.
Your phone on us.
GPS. Waze, anything else.
Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for coming to this second session. We really appreciate it. What questions might you have?
Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Our church is outside of Winston-Salem. We minister to two apartment complexes. We have limited success, mostly Spanish, young people with children.
Yeah.
Our church is fairly small, but my pastor has a heart for the getting out and doing and serving all the people. But it's difficult. We have limited people because of the size of our church. But it's just, we just had some problem. I can see if you live right in or close to Charlotte or in Charlotte or something like that, closer to the city. We're a mile or two outside of
I sure don't want to cloud the water by talking about our specific context. These are just the stories that, but you're absolutely right that this is there are multifamily housing opportunities in very rural communities, and the context looks different, the approaches look different, but there are needs all over the state for sure. Yeah.
I'm just gonna see if I get you guys' thoughts. This is something we struggle with. We work in two different trailer apartments. In our community, one that's probably 70% Hispanic, and the other one that's probably 80% African American. And we've had various degrees of involvement. Right now, we have trailers in both parks, where we do Bible studies and stuff like that. But we've always hit this barrier of we can get the kids really well, but how do they move past just having time with kids?
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
You said you have a trailer in.
Yes.
So what is the goal? Is the goal to get people to that? Like what would a win look like for you guys?
Sure. We have a Hispanic congregation as part of our church, and they're involved with the Hispanic population there. So a win would be to see more. We do have a handful of families that come to our Hispanic congregation, and they started a life group type thing in one of the houses there, but it's never taken off super out. For several, our one that's probably responding to Hispanic, we'd like to see just a better engagement with the community, of really seeing people come to know Christ, families come to know Christ, rather than just reaching out to kids. And then the other one, honestly, we're trying to be more incarnational in the African American community. Our youth pastors looking to move in there, and kind of establish. We're not sure what, but something more permanent in reaching folks there.
How long have you been in those communities?
So the one that's Hispanic, it was not. We've been in for 10, 12 years, but it started out primarily Anglo, actually.
Okay.
And then the last several years, it's. Demographic has changed drastically. Okay. And then the other one, we've only been in for a couple of years. We're knocking on doors one day, and the owner said, we've been looking for a church to come help us out here. We said, okay.
We'll see if we can find one.
Yeah. So we've been working there for a few years now as well.
So I've worked with a couple of people that have worked in primarily Hispanic communities.
Yeah.
And generally, I do think that they've basically talked about how it is sometimes easier to get the kids than the parents. I guess my question would be, have you guys engaged the parents and asked them, like, hey, we'd love to show you guys have.
And I think it's part of it is also just language barriers.
Yeah. Exactly. So,
when I'm in there, I speak very little Spanish.
Yep.
It's not pretty when I speak Spanish. But we do have a handful of people that do, but that is part of the issue that I realize is that.
That's what we found out.
We
try to bring people in that actually have the language, but it does become a problem when they're not available all the time.
And for them, a lot of us ended up being figuring out ways, how do we engage the parents even sometimes through the kids, like a quinceañera. Like, I've had them, they've gone out and been like, hey, we're going to take some time to spend some time with the whole family and just tell them, like, hey, we want to engage with you guys. And even sometimes, maybe even setting up things. They actually, I think, ended up setting up like a women's Bible study because they found that the women typically knew one another and were already engaging in things. But they were like, hey, we'd love to have a Bible study if you guys would have a space for us to have it. And that's been one way that they've been able to gauge. But figure out, like, how can we transition from doing things where we're having the kids come to us to maybe even doing something that involves the family and the kids that we've already had good connections with.
And one thing I have seen, I mean, we had a youth pastor. He's going overseas to do ministry over there.
But gotcha.
We had a youth pastor who was doing karate in a trailer park neighborhood and had all kinds
like
of kids
people?
In.
Huh? Like on people?
Yeah. he actually does it by belly fighting, but I won't go into it. But anyways, he got to the point to where the kids felt so comfortable with them. The kids were going back to because they know English. Most of these young kids know English.
Mm-hmm.
And they start talking to their parents about it.
Yep.
So that's how you get the foot in the door as far as getting the parents. Because the parents are standoff. I mean, you're something for your kids, but they didn't want to be a part of it. But he got to the point to where those kids loved him so much and thought so much of how much time he gave. Those kids were going back. And we had a couple parents come to our church out of it. But, I mean, that's the one thing you can get to that transitional period to where the parents are involved through the kids themselves.
Yeah.
So, well, that's not easy sometimes.
Similar stories. We were engaged in a community and the language barrier is a big problem, but not for the kids. But so we said, all right, we want to get everybody out. So we cooked hot dogs and tried to get everybody out, and no parents would come. And the kids would eat a hot dog. We're like, do you want a hot dog? They said, no, I don't want a hot dog. And we're like, well, what do you want? And they're like, not hot dogs. And so, and so what we did, which duh, right? But there was a teenager, a young man who great English and Spanish. And so what I did the next time when my youth group was working with the kids, I went around with him and he translated for me. And we had a group of ladies that were out there, and I wasn't being funny. They were laughing a lot, so he was probably picking on me. But I just asked them, what would y'all like to eat? We all help cook it and show us how to cook it. You know, we want to make sure that what we prepare is something that y'all enjoy. And that way, you know, we had a kind of a joke, and they could pick on me for fixing hot dogs, you know. And then they had some ownership of it. And then they'll tell their friends, hey, we're cooking whatever it was. Y'all come help us cook. And they had a big spread. And there was a DJ that lived in the community. And he let us play. They probably understand a word of it, but he let us play the music. And he would do his DJ stuff. And so when they got some ownership of it, through one teenager who was later baptized and they came to faith, because he was my translator, I shared the gospel through him. So he's saying it, and he's hearing it every time. You know. So if you can find one person, it'll be kind of an advocate to the community for you.
We've had groups of ladies that said, look, we love to cook for the whole community. We can't buy groceries for the whole community. So we've been able to, you give me a shopping list and we'll just do this thing together. We've had something very similar take place before, and it's listen to the community. They're giving you the answers that you're looking for.
I would say that's probably...
A lot of places you've been, are most of the neighborhoods receptive? I mean, from what my experience, I mean, I grew up as a young man out of high school going through college that I was living in these apartment complexes.
Yeah.
And then all through, I was not saved then. Until I met my wife and got involved with the church she was in, I didn't know church. And I'm just saying, I was at a point in my life, and if somebody would have reached out to me back in the day and showed me the Bible and led me through it, it would have changed my life. I'm just, is there a, I know it's like the 95% and all that.
Yep.
How do you approach a lower income neighborhood compared to a higher income area? Because there are different way people accept you differently.
Sure.
See, if I go into a lower income neighborhood that is not of my skin color, they're not going to, in most cases, I'm not saying always, but, and same thing if I went to try to go into a high dollar neighborhood, I'm not going to fit right in. I mean, that's, I understand we're sharing God's word and all that, but how do you have a way to...
Can I throw a baseline in and then you guys build off of it?
Yeah. Because,
so again, across all the four, if you listen really well, right? So there's a lot of what I call drive-by evangelism, you know, that's taking place. That's kind of like blow in, blow up, blow out kind of stuff. And so folks have a bit of a trust issue, you know. But so it's going to take a long time to build that trust again and be present. And so I think just being there and listening, but something as simple as there are two apartment complexes that are beside each other, and we had we just walked around kind of after we've been in the community for a few weekends just talking to people. We could walk through and say, hey, we're going to have a cookout. It doesn't cost anything. We just want to get to know everybody. I mean, real low key, we had like 200 and some people show up to this cookout between these two, and they were just sitting around talking. We're not talking kids. We're talking kids and adults and elderly folks and just hanging out in this park that was in the middle of these two at-risk communities. And they just kept, but they were very at arm's length. Like, for example, why isn't your phone number on this flyer? You know, we had to put a website address. They thought, well, we didn't want to connect with them. I'm like, no, here's my personal. So I'm like writing this down. There are lots of things that they, and we hadn't flyered the community. We had some things that people came and hung out and they wanted to connect with us and wanted a way for them to reach back out to us. Those kind of things, it's just listening to the particular community. I'm sorry, I talked over you.
No.
Is it a consistency thing? Do they see the same person over and over again?
I think that's helpful. I wanted to give you a story directly, dealing with me. So growing up, I grew up in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I grew up in, when I was younger, in a trailer park. And my aunts and some of my uncles, they lived in an affordable housing community. There was a church that wanted to reach that community, right? But the fact was, a lot of people didn't have cars. And they weren't too sure about sending their kids to another church and stuff. So what they decided to do, they just took a space that, a community center, and they literally said, you know what, we're going to have a church service right here. Mm-hmm. And so they ended up starting to come out. They did drum lessons throughout the week where the kids could, just the musicians would come in and teach the kids how to play, no gospel presentation, anything. But as people started to get comfortable with them, they're like, hey, we'll come to this service. For me personally, as I got older, I in my early 20s, I lived in a gated B-type community. My neighbor beside me, I saw him kind of coming and going. One time, I wasn't a Christian at the time. One time, I was about to go out and go to a bar, you know, to go party or whatever. I turned to him. I was like, hey, man, you know, where you headed out? Where you going to party at? He's like, no, man, actually, I'm going to church. Awesome. And it just blew my mind. Later on, I needed some help moving out. And I didn't really have anybody to ask. I was like, man, this dude's a Christian. Maybe I should ask him. I knocked on his door. And I said, hey, man, can you help me out? Came by, late at night. He had an event. Came by, 12 o'clock at night. Came in, helped me move my stuff out of my apartment. And then that, for me, gave him, hey, what do you can say whatever you want to say. Now, you just helped me move my stuff out. And he just, invited me. he just invited me into community with him. Just kind of explain what the gospel would look like. It's not this and it's not that. This is what it is. Now, I'm going to tell you, did I accept the gospel that night? No. But I remembered him. And later on when I became a Christian, I hunted him down on Facebook and said, thank you, man. You had a huge influence. So part of that was just, one, I saw him. Two, he told me just hands down, hey, this is who I am. And I respected it. And then I also saw it in his action. So I think it's consistency. I think it's also making sure that you're aware of what's going on around you. And then also saying hey, how can I connect to what people already care about? Instead of trying to make people just care about what I care about. So.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess that's what I was getting at. I'm just trying to figure out what they're looking for. What,
yeah.
What
and
that's consistency.
Exactly. And conversation.
When you
conversation
with them, that's
true in any case.
Yeah.
That incarnational seems, I don't know if you know David Parsons.
Yeah.
I mean, he's moved in to some degree to this complex, and that works.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there any more questions? I mean, we don't. I know we're technically our time is ended. But if you guys do have any other questions or anything else, we would love to still answer them
for
you.
Thank you so much for coming.